When you fold up Whitecaps 2 in Vancouver and instead move it to Cincinnati, it's That's So MLS with myself, Nick Thornton. And with me, as always, is Andrew Bates. Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing good. No one will know. No one will know if they just, you know, change, if they just start the team again in another place.
I will get into all the trades and things like that, but I guess we should talk about the fact that we are, of course, a North American soccer podcast available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you procure podcasts.
Now on TuneIn Radio.
And we saw some departures from not just from the Whitecaps, but some past Whitecaps moving to FC Cincinnati this week. But we'll get to all of that.
The other thing that departed was the 2018 season.
We're done. It's kind of, I don't know about you. Do you find it a little anticlimactic? Did you watch the final?
I did. I got to watch it live. I was able to give it a good look. I liked it. I thought it was a worthy final. It set the attendance record. I think that let's get into it, but I think the thing about all the transaction stuff is it's weird. We talked about this a little bit earlier this week. It's weird how many players that you would consider like the standouts of the league were already gone by the time MLS Cup happened. Partially because of this season, partially because it takes so long to get to the final. I was thinking I'm sitting here with my eggnog. You can tell that winter is truly begun because it's now the day after the MLS final.
Yeah.
Or it's the days after the MLS final. But I was really, watching it with a hope that you were going to sort of see, a little bit of hope for the underdogs in Portland and to see, what they could put together. I think that it was a 2-0 or 3-0 win for Atlanta. The spark that you saw in some of Portland's come from behind victories, they did not have. The relentless, their relentless attacking pressure that you see from Atlanta was definitely present. You could see the train coming, but you couldn't get out of the way.
Yeah, it's a good summary of the game. And I mean, there's not too many surprises here. I think the main thing I just wanted was it to be a competitive match because as much as clearly Atlanta deserved to win it all, I just wanted it to not be a complete rout. I wanted it to look like Portland had a chance, which they did, I would say. I thought overall they played a really good game. They had a couple of chances. I think they played as well against Atlanta away as any team has played them in Mercedes-Benz this season. So I think they should be proud of the performance, but as you said, it was always going to be way too much for them to handle. And I think the fact that they lost 2-0 and had a couple of chances of their own says that Portland doesn't need to worry too much about next season and the things they need to change. But definitely, I think that there's some work to be done there. And for Atlanta, it was just a case of them digging in. And we've talked about the gears that they have to them, where they can just overpower a team, or our team, but many teams, and score a glut of goals. But this, for me, was just proof of how good of a team they are, because they got in and did all the little things right. And I don't think they were looking to necessarily win this game by 4 or 5 goals. They wanted a nice, tidy 2-0 win. And they defended extremely well. They ran midfield for the most part, even though Portland really took the midfield battle to them. And they just knew that they had to get things right in the final third, which they always seem to do. So hats off to them. Thoroughly deserved win.
They are the champions, and it seemed that they had been sort of built for this, and we could talk about sort of what this means in the future for them. I did initially say 3-0, and that's because this game and the Copa Libertadores final second leg bled together, and I thought there was an empty net goal at the end for some reason. Not true. Not true.
Not true. I mean, it came close.
Yeah, because there was this... So, you... Right, okay, so you have sort of some decent chances early. Portland almost commits this penalty that would have got things started a lot earlier. A lot of people, I watched sort of the instant replay feature about some of the calls that people thought were controversial. This penalty, it's... You really have to zap Reuter it to see if he touched the ball, but it really doesn't look like he does. And the argument against calling it is that it's soft, but I still think, you know, if you kick the striker in the back of the leg, you don't kick the ball, and the striker, there's no amount of soft to that makes it okay.
The interesting thing about that one was that they didn't go to VAR with it. Or did they? Did they go to VAR?
No, because what they kept...
Because it wasn't clear and obvious enough.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, that's right. They kept saying that on commentary.
Which is kind of maddening, but for me, I guess this is where a little bit of bias comes in, because it's just like, come on. It's a playoff game that early on in. If you give a penalty, you've given the whole match, basically.
That's true.
However, as a referee, I think that's still an okay thing to be considering, to go like, unless it's a really clear penalty... How many penalties have been awarded for them at home? So you need a really clear and compelling reason to give it. I think he gets a little bit of the ball. Is it a great tackle? No. I think there's an argument for it being 50-50. And of course, this is one of those things where you go, well, what if Portland had won? But that could have been the thing that changed the tide of the game. But it wasn't. So that was one of the few calls that I felt like... maybe I could see the point in, but I would have been, I think, just as a fan, pretty upset to see a match thrown in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
On what was, it wasn't a clear penalty. So if it's not a clear penalty, then I'm okay with it not being called.
No. Yeah, absolutely. Then you have the first goal, which comes on the 38th minute. I was sort of like really comparing it to the New York thing and thinking, well, I mean, they've made it further than New York did at this time, so I guess that's pretty good. And New York having conceded on the 33rd minute in the semifinal in Atlanta. The thing was that, and I think this was the theme overall with Portland in the game, is that they were too error prone. This is a scenario where they got stretched out. Where Atnella, who did have some great saves in the game, was sort of just trying to was outstretched on the ground, and Martinez, you know, navigated around him far too easily.
Yeah, I mean, there was that. I felt like Atnella could have done better in that situation, but it's actually, I think it's, Obosi gets tackled by Michael Parkhurst from behind. Obosi turns his back and gives it up. And I think Savarese was upset because he thought that should have been called a foul, what led to the goal. But I think that's... I mean, he said that right after the match, and so I think it's a coach's prerogative to say that kind of thing. But looking at it, it's a superb tackle from Michael Parkhurst. Yes, he cleans out Obosi, and he comes in from behind, but it's all ball. He takes out Obosi as well, but... Like you said, it was those little errors that Portland made that why are you turning your back to these attacking midfielders that are coming to break up play with a half-hearted pass back to one of your defenders? That's a poor play to begin with. And then Atnella comes out, gets his angle all wrong. His defenders aren't rushing back to help out. That's one of those ones where, although it happens quickly, I kind of want to see somebody at least trying to run back and clear it off the line and provide some support. And that being said, it's also completely exquisite skill from Martinez to just come in and then just very calmly take an extra touch to slide it in past Atnella. There's a lot of strikers that you know, are going to overthink that one and try to blast it and hit it at the goalkeeper, but he waits until he actually has the open net to slide it in.
Absolutely. So by this point, you know, I have this, what I'm thinking of is very much the comparison between New York. And I do think by this point, Portland is more positive and is getting forward more and is attacking more. So I'm not entirely thinking, oh, they're screwed by the time that they concede this. But I sort of, you know, continue to, you know, I said a lot that the win condition was going to be, you know, Sebastian Blanco, you know, scores a tying goal, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm trying to look at the actual numbers here, but it's almost immediately after that, 4 minutes afterwards, this Obobese chant, Blanco to Obobese chance, Jeremy Obobese.
Yeah.
You can't entirely say that Obobese screwed it up, and you also can't say that it was necessarily like on its own, a spectacular effort that was 100% going in, but that's the moment in the narrative that they had to come back.
And that's the chance.
That's the chance. And they had a couple other of those chances. There was one opportunity when Alvis Powell, an amazing pass to him out wide. The ball just hits his boot square and goes off in the wrong direction before he could pass or do anything with it. Bricks it. There's another one. I can't remember who it is before this, the second. And again, just a lot of sort of error related stuff. That's just like in terms of plays are starting to get put together and there is a dispossession or a pass that doesn't go right. Like this is what I mean by that spark just not being there that has been there on the nights that was their night.
Well, going back to the Obobese chance, it is set up very well from Blanco, and it feels like that's the opportunity. It's difficult for Obobese, though, because part of me was like, well, you should have redirected it back across goal, but Guzan's actually a little bit more cheated to the left.
Yeah.
So I think he does hit it in the right place. If anything, he just needed to go a little bit further to the left, and maybe he would have beat him, or maybe a little bit more power. Regardless, It's a tricky shot to pull off, and that was for me the moment where I was like, okay, if Atlanta scores again, this thing really is done, because you know that Portland was only ever going to get a couple of chances if they worked really hard and had a bit of luck on their side, which they did, but you've got to put at least one of them away to give yourself a shout. And then to be fair, I mean, you talk about like the little mistakes that happened and they were definitely there, but I thought what Portland did really well in this match is they did really break up play in midfield. They understood that in order to have any chance against Atlanta, you need to break up their flow. And if you're going to let them string together 9, 10, 11, 12 passes, then sooner or later they're going to break through and cut you like butter. But if you're able to just lunge forward, put a bunch of pressure on the person holding the ball, force them to pass back, and just slide in, and even if you don't necessarily win possession, but you just break up the flow of the game, which made it not the most interesting at certain stretches, I was like, this is how you stymie this team.
Yes.
You can't just sit and absorb pressure and then hope to counter, because they can get so many players back behind the ball. You need to break it up in midfield and then hit them on the counter there. But if you're trying to win a counter from deep defensively, they've got the speed and the experience, the positioning that usually they're going to get back in numbers, and then you're playing against a team that's defending in a bank of eight.
Yeah, I think that when you look at the possession statistics, you're right about this, that they were able to break it up, and I think they were able to do it before and afterwards. But that's how we were saying you can't just soak things up, but in that first half, I don't have the number in front of me, but if I recall, at the time, it was like in the possession for Atlanta was in the 60% range.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the possession charts, things really only start to turn around once the first goal is scored. Did you see Portland's game change, I guess, after that first goal goes in?
I mean, it did. I think their changes came at the right points. I think Savarese was right to not do it all at once. And try. And that being said, it felt like they dug in a little bit and sort of had half chances. Mm-hmm. I think what we saw on display during the Cup was Portland playing as well as they can against a really, like, against the best team in MLS right now.
Yep, absolutely.
And it wasn't a poor performance from Portland. The reason why you only get a handful of chances and why it's so hard to get them to come off and make them work for you is because Atlanta's that good. Yes, there were still some mistakes made, and I feel like a little bit of more homework could have been done by certain individual players. But overall, I thought Savarese had a really good game plan. And yes. One or two things go slightly different, and maybe it's 1-1, and you take it to added time and maybe somehow take it to penalties. But overall, as we've said with numerous games that Atlanta's played, this really says more about Atlanta than it does about their opponents.
Yeah, that's pretty true. The second goal was really great. It's sort of this example of what I think we looked at being a strength of Atlanta in a weakness for Portland, which was Escobar, you know, on a ball in for Martinez, defense is just being too focused on sort of where they think. I guess it's, you know, all a game of deciding where you think the ball is going to go, but a attacker is allowed to sort of float free off the base, off the defenders, as their attention is elsewhere, and heads it home.
And the interesting thing is there's at least two guys covering Martinez, and yet Martinez still gets up and over both of them to flick the ball on. And as you said, nobody's watching that far post, and Escobar can just run in and grab it. But yeah, it definitely has been an issue for them on those set plays and just keeping focus. To me, if you're going to have that many players covering a player, nobody gets in front of Martinez to take that ball from him. So what are you doing defending a set piece against the best striker in MLS if you're still letting him get up and over you? Mm-hmm. Because we know he can also be the provider of goals for others. So that for me was one where I went, yeah, they'd probably want to redo on that one. As you say, the attention was just elsewhere. It's not the worst set piece defending we've seen this season, but in a final, you'd think that they would just be a little bit more paying attention. You're playing against Atlanta, and nobody's guarding the far post. Nobody's watching to see if there's a runner coming in. We know that they can score goals by committee, and that's what makes them even more difficult to play against, is they can still beat teams easily when you completely cover Martinez and Almiron.
That's absolutely right. Because this is the thing, is that, you know, you talk about other players being the best attacking whoever, you rarely ever, you know, somebody, I heard somebody today refer to Greg Garza as the best attacking left back in the league. And it's like, I don't know that I've ever heard Greg Garza say before this.
I've certainly heard lots of stuff about Greg Garza this term, but
yeah, maybe I just wasn't, you know, tuned in at the right time. But
I think part of it is the coverage of Atlanta means that you're really not talking about any of their defenders that much.
Yes.
I mean, how many times have you heard Lorentowicz's name this season? Mm-hmm. Or like, I'm having a bad week for names. Parkhurst.
Parkhurst, yeah, absolutely.
Like, those guys have been just as influential to the wins, so.
It's true, having this is the value in a strong backline that you talk about. Now, I think that this game was, is as much as dramatically, especially if you were hoping for any sort of reversal or result from Portland, was a little unsatisfying. As a game itself, it was still, I think, a worthy final. It had a lot of offense. It had a lot of, you know, move. There was excitement. There were thrills and spills. There were goals. I don't think that this was a. I don't think this was a. I think this was a worthy final. And in the end of the day, I was excited to watch it. I think.
Yeah, I think it. Yeah, I've seen more exciting games. I've seen more exciting finals. But had Portland played any other way, it would have been 5-0. So I'm okay with the way things shaped up.
You said that this says a lot more about Atlanta. What do you think that this means for Atlanta and will mean for Atlanta and its fans in the league?
I love a lot of people have been sort of taking some commentators to task saying that Atlanta fans have been very patient for this victory. Like, they've been in the league for 2 years. Well, and they like almost won it last year.
they like to plug into the narrative of Atlanta as a city not having a championship for so many years. Which, as much as I was the person who said that DC people needed to remember DC United won that thing once, that thing being MLS Cup and the US Open Cup, it doesn't look as good when you're the one grabbing at Major League Sports for legitimacy, you know?
Yeah,
like, I think
yeah.
Major League. Teams that report on sports in general should respect MLS, but I don't know that I need MLS so often to reference the last time the Atlanta Braves won a championship.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What it says about Atlanta or what it means for them going forward, what their season means far more than them winning MLS Cup. As we've seen with Toronto, winning MLS Cup does not guarantee you squat the next year.
No.
And, of course, we have a huge number of changes to consider in that Almiron may not be back, Martinez may not be back. We know for sure Tata's not back. So a lot of things can change. And as of today, Greg Garza also is no longer playing with Atlanta United. He's also moved over to FC Cincinnati. So a lot can change. I think that they've got a really great system set up. I think that they've set the bar in a way for the rest of the league that it's going to take in terms of the massive amount of talent, it's not just about the money, but it's where the money is being spent and the way that they've built a really strong team that doesn't just revolve around a couple of key players. That's, I think, what sets the tone. And so I think regardless of there's maybe four or five other MLS teams that I think have a similar genetic makeup right now that can battle with them. But I think the other MLS teams need to take note that this really is the standard now. And they have to be much more aggressive in signing complete players and having really great coaches with different game plans, not just always doing the same thing over and over again, thinking you're going to get success. LA Galaxy being the perfect team that I think symbolizes this old school MLS where they're just so stuck to a particular way of doing things, organizing a team, buying players, etc., that it will get them maybe to the playoffs, but it's not going to get them past that. Mm-hmm. And the Atlantas, the Sporting Kansas Cities, the Portlands, etc., those are the teams that have figured it out. So it's, and I would say DC United as well. At least these teams are on the right track to compete. Mm-hmm. For me, I go Portland. What do they need? They need to spend some money on a really good striker. And I would say maybe take a look at that back line and add a couple of pieces there. Otherwise, they've got a great team.
The comparison of to LA Galaxy is interesting to me because LA Galaxy is instrumental as a team in ushering in what a lot of people would refer to as MLS 2.0. And the big banner at the beginning of this game said MLS 3.0 on it. And they did set the MLS Cup record, 73,019 fans in attendance. I wonder what this will mean. Like, because the thing is that there is still sort of an, like, what I think is interesting about the way that the Atlanta went and built their team Not that they didn't draw on existing MLS talent, because obviously Parkhurst and Laurentowicz are a big part of that, and Guzan's a big part of that. But, you know, the top end kind of shows that the weirdness at MLS right now is that you can kind of go get your team from elsewhere. Mm-hmm. You can build a core from anywhere in the world and bring that and sort of graft that onto the league right now.
Yeah.
In terms of your top players and your manager. And this is almost – this was the launch build of Atlanta. And I think that they had they had money behind it. They had a specific goal. They accomplished that goal. What I'm interested to see is how they roll out the first expansion pack. Because this was Atlanta 1.0, but Atlanta 2.0 is going to look a lot different.
I think so, yeah.
And they're going to have to build that from within the league, too.
Yeah, and I think that's where things are potentially going to get really interesting, is that, as we saw with Toronto, it's like this doesn't guarantee anything. And now it's we say this so often, every year, every MLS team gets better, with a few exceptions. And that's their own fault, is that teams need to be more ambitious about how they're building and not just think about how can we build the best Colorado Rapids or Orlando City or even Vancouver Whitecaps. It's how can we build one of the best MLS teams mm-hmm. in the league? And I know, of course, everybody's trying to do that. I just think that there's some teams that are – there's sort of an elite five or six that are doing a much better job of it than others, where they understand you need a mix of some marquee signings to just make your all-around team play better, but that you also need to be smart about how you do it elsewhere on the pitch. Signing a major DP and, you know, another prolific scorer nobody had really heard about worked for a little while for Chicago, but they're not a good enough all-around team to go very far. No. Portland, on the other hand, I think has done a very good job of showing that if you spread that money out a little bit, you don't necessarily need a ton of star power if you have really excellent players who have a little bit more technical prowess, for example.
That's right. And I think that is something the thing that I'm really kind of focusing on here is as much as people are saying, oh, MLS 3.0, this is a new, you know, model that other teams need to get onto. I'm just trying to like focus on, you know, if you're a middle range team, like what moves can you make now to make that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, maybe that's part of our off-season project is to look at some of those mid-table teams and think, well, what do they do to rebuild and get back into contention here? Because it's very clear that if they just continue to add a couple of pieces and tinker, I think we can probably fully expect that Atlanta's going to struggle at some point next year because they are going to look different. I think they'll still be a good team, just like Toronto was a good team. But maybe they do the same thing and throw everything at the Champions League and end up sacrificing some stuff in the league, pick up a couple of injuries, and right back to the same story.
I guess that's true. What do you think?
Kind of on that. Sorry.
I was going to ask now, you know, we talked a lot about Atlanta, but what do you think this all means for Portland? Because I think that Portland is a team that you would not have because you would not have really started the playoffs being like, I think that Portland is definitely one of the top teams I would expect to get into the finals. I don't know that this represents in any way a dereliction of their you know potential.
Absolutely not. Savarese, I think, is a great coach. He's done. I mean, I don't think it's very obvious he's a good coach and has done great things for Portland this season. You know, they're adding a bunch of seats to Providence Park, which I think is good to give that place a bit of a facelift and add some more seating capacity. So there's some intention there to grow the club. I don't think it means a ton for Portland. The biggest mistake I think they could make is blow up the team and try to totally reorganize and change their identity. They're a team that can be incredibly difficult to play against. And with players like Blanco sort of finally fitting in and really starting to turn the screws, not screw the turns, maybe some of those too. Bobosi had a point and was kind of hot, but I feel like you can probably offload him and bring in somebody who's maybe a little bit more of a technical finisher. I think you want to start looking at potential backups to Valeri. Valeri seems to just always have gas in the tank and play really well, but to expect him to play every single game to the ability that we've seen him play at this point, I feel like is a little naive. It can't just all rest on his shoulders, but I see no reason why he wouldn't be back next year and continue to be Diego Valeri. Otherwise, I think that they've got a good system sorted out. They're one of the teams that I think can just go, okay, what can we add a few pieces and get a little bit better? Because their bar is already pretty high. I would see them as in that five or six teams that really, if they get a little better, they'll be a really competitive team next season. But they don't need to change much.
I think they're definitely somebody that you could, Samuel Armenteros was in the, I think that forward spot, I would hold on to a Bobosi and let him develop some more.
Sure.
But the forward spot, Armenteros sort of came in and out of favor. And I think if it's going to be a Bobosi, you might want to, have somebody to compete against him, and you can bring people in to sort of, shore up the roles that, a Darlington Nagbe or a Fernando Addy had in this team.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're not being fulfilled right now, but one of the things that made it in 2015 or in that sort of that era where the three of them were together, they had such a dangerous sort of attacking multi-headed monster approach. And I think that maybe getting one more strong attacker in there to draw some more attention and help, split things so that Valeri can move a little more unimpeded or that kind of thing. I think that would be positive, or Blanco can move unimpeded. It might be worth thinking about another center back. Larry Smabiala is not a slouch, but I think had a couple issues in the course of the game. Not saying that means that you have to go sell him or anything, but I mean, like, if you're looking at the Atlanta back line, there's nobody that I would switch. If you're looking at the Portland back line and telling me one of them must go, I know which one it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think Mabiala had redeemed himself a little bit over the course of the season. I know he had some pretty terrible games and also had some games where he was really crucial. And this is one where I felt like he was kind of, I would say, a solid C-plus performance. Wasn't bad, but it wasn't particularly great. But definitely, if you're looking to improve, I agree, that's a point. So, overall, I mean, I'm sure that, they'll be very, very disappointed they didn't win the Cup, but they certainly came in and stole the Western Conference, and them and Sporting Kansas City set the bar really high for what it's going to take in the Western Conference to establish a clear lead.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's going to be interesting to see what happens with them next year. Because of weirdness involving the CONCACAF Champions League, realignment with that means that they're going to have to both get the 18 and the 17 and 18 people into the 2017-2018 qualifiers into this coming league. Mm-hmm. So Portland is the losing finalist, does not get a berth.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Red Bulls benefited, because they got the other spot, I guess, because they were the I guess even the supporter shield people didn't get it. I'm trying to remember what the exact breakdown on that was, but it was if Portland win, Portland is in. And if Portland lose, New York is in. So they posted this, you know, we qualified graphic that they were in the Champions League. And somebody posted that whole skiff. We qualified for the Champions League, but what did it cost? Everything.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Well, since we're on the subject of teams building, because I don't feel like there's much more to talk about with this final beyond, yep, they did it. That is over now.
Really big, really good ratings. Really good ratings.
Huge ratings. Ratings were huge. Which is always good. I'm happy to see that MLS is growing. I know we like to grumble about things in this league, but it's nice to see. But a whole lot of things happened in between then and now, and especially today.
I have the most important one of these.
What's that?
I have the most important one. Merritt Paulson quit Twitter.
Oh, jeez. Again.
This is the big postseason change, you know? Merritt Paulson posted this picture of him on the airplane making important changes with the Portland people. And with the loss, released his mid Merritt Paulson's Twitter account. It will be eligible for the 2018 MLS waiver draft.
Nice. I didn't realize that was all just a setup for that joke. I didn't see that one coming. That was nice. Oh, dear.
But they did have a half-season trade window that led to the release of protected rosters for the expansion draft, which took place today.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, we can't go through every single player that changed hands, but one of the big ones, which is another one of the worst-kept secrets in MLS, is that Zach Steffen has been confirmed that he's going to Manchester City, but it's not going to be until this summer. And all we know right now is that it's a record deal for an MLS keeper. So it's going to be a tidy sum of money. I'm guessing it's probably 15 or 16 million. But
why would it be like that?
I didn't go into all the details, but essentially they're wanting to bring him in the summer window. And so my guess is that it was something to do with having enough goalkeeping folks on the books until then. I don't know. I mean, I guess they want to finish up the season and then reassess, because then they can decide, who do we want as our goalkeepers? We've got this young kid. Do we want him playing as our second string, or do we want to loan him out? But if they bring him in at this point, he's probably guaranteed not to play. I'm not really sure.
It seems like a really strange choice for Steffen.
And
for the crew.
Acquiring a work permit could be an issue.
Okay, that makes more sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
He's got to get some more U.S. men's national team starts, I guess. Yeah, I think it's weird for the crew. I can't think of another. You know, there's a lot of MLS inbound transfers that don't take place to the summer. I can't think of any outbound transfers that do. And it's especially weird for that to happen to your starting goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. I guess that's just how the cookie crumbles in this case. It's great for him. I hope if this means that it's more likely that he will actually play for City and not get immediately and not be, you know, sort of treated as like an asset, I'm super excited for that. It just remains to see. It adds to the weird balancing act the crew is going to have to do this upcoming year.
Yeah, it certainly does. And you know, if I'm just thinking about Zach Steffen, how is it a bad thing if he goes to Man City and immediately gets loaned out and gets playing time in Europe?
I guess that's not true. I guess that's not bad.
For him as an individual, yes, of course we want to see him playing for City and we want to see him steal the starting spot, but he's a kid still, you know, like if he goes to some second tier German team, they're still better than the crew. He's still going to be around better players and get better experience. So, of course we want to see him get a starting spot, but I think that's likely going to mean he gets loaned out to get that.
That's fair. The, The other big move that took place, I'd say, before the expansion draft is Maxi Arruda is going to Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Big, big, big pickup for them. I think that that is a great move. That sort of adds to the attacking balance of that side. Tajiri Shirati is great. I think that having somebody to play off of as you start to try and move more focus away from Ignacio Piatti, I feel like this season a lot moved on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Safir Tider that I'm thinking of. Safir Tider looked great for Montreal this year, but I really feel that they started to get used a little bit more to not relying so much on Ignacio Piatti, that it wasn't necessarily like that they had learned their lesson, you know? Like, it continued, it ended up to being a lot of the bright spots of the season at the end was him tearing it up, which is great.
Yeah.
But I think if you have a player like Maxi Arruda, you now have three very powerful attacking players, and I think that that is something that's going to be really positive for them.
Yeah, and Rudy struggled this year with Dallas, and I still think he's a player with that we could see more out of. So I think it's a great change of pace for him, and a fresh challenge. And I think Montreal and Dallas are similar teams in that they go on these really good runs, and they can be a hard team to play against, but really haven't found that kind of complete winning thing yet that is the right combination of elements. And so I agree, I think it's a good pickup for Montreal.
Do we want to, I feel like we should just name the expansion draft picks. I feel like we want to talk about Vancouver a lot because there's been a lot of Vancouver movement.
Mm-hmm.
But to just sort of name the key moves of Cincinnati in this draft, I think are important. Their number one pick was Darren Maddux. I think Darren Maddux is due for a great season. And I think that although it was being sort of the Wayne Rooney understudy was a good role for him, he's potentially ready for more.
I mean, it also makes sense in the fact that Alan Koch has had a good look at him, right? Like he's been around Darren Maddux and knows enough about how he plays. And I think that, you know, I think going into the season, you would say Darren Maddux is never going to be the starting striker necessarily or a star striker. And I thought DC put him in a really good role where they were able to highlight his qualities and use him to the best of his abilities. And had it not been for the introduction of Rooney and a few other players just sort of getting their chance, we might have seen more of him. But certainly he was still a factor for DC United through their season. So I think it's a good pickup for Cincinnati in that they've already built a core group of players from their USL team that they're, it looks like they're trying to hold on to a good number of them. But they need a goal. They need a goal scorer who understands MLS, and now they have one.
They had, traded Spencer Ritchie's rights for a draft pick. The second pick, Cincinnati picked free agent rights to Kai Kamara from the Whitecaps, which to me is, I don't know why you do this. It gets the Whitecaps an extra $50,000 in allocation money, but I guess it's that the window's closed, so you have the rights to do this when nobody else is there. But they drafted Kamara and then traded the rights to the Rapids for an international spot. So there's a lot going on there. There's a lot of imaginary Monopoly money changing hands in various directions for a player that's not under contract.
A lot of space money changing hands, but importantly, what they did with that international roster spot was then immediately fill it with Kendall Waston.
So that was
the interesting thing, is that we've got a former Whitecaps coach who already has former Whitecaps players on his now new MLS team, who traded a spot to bring in a white cap so that he could trade that white cap to bring in another white cap.
For Alan, there's some interesting things going on with the white caps. And let's just roll through the rest of these so that we can get to the white caps. Roland Lamont was drafted from FC Dallas. Great pick. He's one of the players that has looked good for Dallas. Eric Alexander, drafted from the Houston Dynamo.
Yeah, another good solid player.
Solid midfielder. Hassan Ndam from the New York Red Bulls is 20. Good, look towards the future. Yeah. I loved watching the stream of it because they were like, I think it was Alan. Alan Koch casually tosses out, oh, by the way, we just traded for Greg Garza. And then the two hosts are like, wow!
Yeah, like, this is the sort of maddening thing is, like, within minutes, this expansion side has two of the best defenders in MLS.
Yeah.
From an expansion draft. And you're just like, what? And part of me was kind of amazed that they didn't pick up Betashur.
Yeah,
Expensive, though. People don't want to pay him what he's worth.
I'm kind of glad. He would have been my number one pick, but also at the same time, I don't want to see him have to move again. You know, the guy gets moved around so often for being so good. A couple things have happened with the Whitecaps. And to provide the context, Alan Koch is the former coach of Whitecaps 2, the former USL associated side. And he was picked as the manager for the USL, retained as the manager when Cincinnati made their way up into MLS. And I think that there are two different sets of relational squad building, which is not necessarily a problem or a bad thing, or it's something in between, where Mark Dos Santos was hired with a specific strategy. He brought in assistant coaches who he knows. He brought in his brother, who was his assistant coach. He brought in the Furies goalkeeping coach, and then immediately brought in the Furies goalkeeper. Max Crepeau, who I think has a shot of being the number one. He had not himself worked with, I don't know that he himself had ever worked with Zach McMath. But McMath was brought in a trade that I believe led to the departure of Kendall Waston, Mesquita.
Yeah.
And
who's also with Colorado now.
As is Kamara, so they're going to be together. So he has this idea, and he also brought in PC from Orlando. Victor Giro, whose nickname is PC because it was explained in an article when he was in Orlando. He once in the Corinthians Academy, he looked like an older player named Pablo Cesar that didn't turn out to be anything. But for some reason, he still is called PC everywhere he goes.
All right.
You know, there's all these graphics, by the way, but I have to think the little 5-second selfie promos they have these players record saying, hey, this is who I am and I'm coming, is like almost better than any like slickly produced package that you can get. Because I'm like, oh, that's a guy.
Yeah, I agree, because I remembered when, because the announcements also, because it was a 4-hour trade window, so the three announcements kind of came all at the same time, and I was like, PC, isn't that guy from Orlando that, like, barely sort of played? Like, I remember I saw him get subbed on a couple of times, so it's like, really? And then I immediately saw his video, and he's like, hey guys, I'm excited to come to Vancouver, and I was like, I'm a fan, I like him, he seems like a good kid.
He made 8 appearances, 5 starts for Orlando. The only time I can remember seeing him, other than his nameplate, was a time he got sent off, which was a pretty egregious red card. And he also last year was the same 8 appearances, 1 red card. And Hero, I believe, in an interview that I saw, PC, when PC was playing at that academy in Corinthians, is when he ran into Mark Dos Santos, who was working at that academy. I don't know that he was working there at the time. Like, he doesn't say in the interview, like, whether or not they specifically were working together, but he said that's the first time that I saw him. And so Dos Santos is building it. Like, Dos Santos is I think that this is something that you've seen before in sports and in corporate life, is somebody who has built up a management strategy and a group of people that they trust and believe they can rely on. And he is very quickly executing the strategy. And one of the sort of, I think, sacrifices is that Kamara is no longer with the team.
Yeah, and when we talked about this sort of as the trade happened, and I was just like, no, this is a huge mistake. We finally have our striker and we're trading him off. But thinking about it a little bit more, I think it's probably not the worst move in the world, but I guess two things here is one is that Mark Dos Santos is rolling the dice a little bit in terms of what he decided to do with the goalkeepers. He's all but said, these are the goalkeepers we're going to have this season. We've got Sean Melvin, we've got Zach McMath, and we've got Maxime Crepeau. Is it that? How you say
I would
it?
Say Crepeau. I would say Crepeau. I don't know.
Crepeau. All three good goalkeepers. And he was very clear that he wanted to free up an international spot for elsewhere on the pitch, which is not necessarily a bad thing. The thing to keep in mind here, and I think a lot of Whitecaps fans were not necessarily aware of this, is this was just the 4-hour trade window. There's still a January trade window.
Yes.
A lot, the Andy Rose, the midfielder he brought in, PC, these may not be star featuring players, but this is Mark Dos Santos beginning to build his team of players that, as you said, he can trust. So you have to take that into account. The Kamara Absolutely. Thing could be a big gamble. I think there's a lot of reasons to justify it. It's a player that costs a lot of money, a player that combined well with players that are no longer with the team, a player that, you know, seems to not always fit in well with teammates, by all counts seemed happy at Vancouver. And I think maybe lacked a bit of on-field leadership in terms of sometimes he would just get frustrated and yell at people, but wouldn't necessarily come up with a game plan for something else to do. I'm still sad to see him go. And the gamble is, as we were talking about near the beginning of the episode, who are you going to bring in that's going to be as good as or better? Because Whitecaps fans really aren't in the mood for another development season of tinkering around with yet another striker that we bring in that has a ton of potential and promise that isn't going to deliver. I think Dos Santos is smart enough to know that, that even just if you take the fans out of the equation, he needs a really good striker and a proven striker. But that's where, you know, messing with one of the things that worked really well with the team this year, it is a bit of a gamble, and it'll be interesting to see what his ideas for replacing it are.
That's a good point, is that there has been a lot of change in the Whitecaps. You know, I was talking with somebody today where it was like, there's five players left that were here 2 years ago, because this is another sort of reboot on top of a reboot. And I would say that sort of like, maybe you'll look back at the era 2017, 2018 as a transition. That was the rebuilding period from the core that had taken place beforehand. Mm-hmm. But there's been so much change, and it's okay to say, you've brought somebody in, so we need some, but this is complete slate clearing change. And the suggestion is that the attacker is the new forward is coming from outside of North America, so interesting to see who that will be. Probably not going to be a Drogba, Zlatan level signing, but is they're looking to spend the Davies money in a couple of places as opposed to one place all at once.
Yeah, which is not necessarily a bad idea. I think the thing that makes me a little nervous is that with Waston gone now, which was inevitable, we knew that was going to happen, and with most of the other center backs left unprotected, Henry's the only one coming back who may not start, you're completely rebuilding your back line, and you're completely rebuilding your wings, and you're completely rebuilding your attack. So Kamara for me was sort of like a piece that you thought, well, maybe you keep that one and you rebuild your back line and you rebuild your wingers around this player. We'll see. I think that's all I can really say at this point. And we've got to wait quite a while for us to get more details about what MDS's grandmaster plan is here for rebuilding the team. But I think it's okay to be a little bit nervous that, is this going to be yet another rebuild of the team? And are we going to have to wait another season to see the impact of that?
I think that one thing is interesting in terms of the rebuild. And this, so this is where you talk about the rebuild in Vancouver coming from its academy. Because Alan Koch had so much, you know, of a hand in that academy. And I hadn't heard about this, but you were suggesting that there was rumors that Carl Robinson was sniffing around Colorado.
No, this isn't my rumor. I claim rumor. It. I've made it up. I just had a thought that of like, okay, so Robbo was a big fan of Mosquita. Robbo was a big fan of bringing Kamara in. Robbo's without a club. I think he's the kind of coach that Colorado needs. So, I mean, I know that he's not there currently and has nothing to do with the players going there. I just sort of thought if you had to pick an MLS team that Carl Robinson would be, like, a good coach at and likely to hire him, I'd say Colorado Rapids would probably be the first one that would come to mind. So that's just my conspiracy theory.
I think that it's interesting to see when you look at a player like Richie and the fact that Richie continues to be, he's only goalkeeper on the books. It's interesting to me to see the people that were on the ground, you know, developing people in the academy, and the people who, like, you know, who's got a chance to look at these people up close, that know the Whitecaps' strategy intimately, are going to other teams and executing it with the same players. I'm interested to see how it differs. And the focus on Richie is one that I find that interesting. I don't know what sort of prevented Richie from ever being considered for a starting position, but it seems like when you took somebody who came up in that system and knew him very well, that he was one of the first stops. And certainly not the only time that Alan Koch has dipped his hand back into the Vancouver development piggy bank.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
With Maddox, you know, with Maddox, with Waston. It's not necessarily saying that, you know, this is somebody that is just going to do exactly what the first team did. But it's like, you know, the Vancouver had Vancouver's scouting and coaching apparatus had some key things they were looking at, and it seems like Cincinnati is adapting some of that same strategy.
Absolutely, and it does beg the question, and this is a little bit of Whitecaps fan saltiness here, is that kind of seemingly, and I know it's not overnight because Alan Koch has been building the Cincinnati team for the last year, but all of a sudden Cincinnati has this really good looking team coming in, and you sort of look at the Whitecaps right now, and I know rosters are not finished for either team, and I look at Cincinnati and I go, yeah, that's a better team. So I think there's, for me anyway, there's a little bit of impatience of like, okay, you know, I know you can't reveal everything, but there's very high expectations here, and Mark Dos Santos says he knows that and is conscious of it, and I sure hope he is, because while I think we're all resigned to the fact that, no, we're never going to get our marquee multi-million-dollar signing, there's still very high expectations for this club, and they need to spend some serious money and deliver on something, you know? We've had a couple of moments where we got a little glimpse of what things could be like, but we've just never had quite the complete team. Good teams, of course, are not built in a season, but if we're looking at another year, 2-3 years of building a club that can compete, I also just think that's a little naive in terms of what's expected at MLS right now, is you really can't afford to be in building mode for too long, because clubs have already built it. And again, every club's getting better. So if we're just a new look Whitecaps, but we're not significantly better, and not just better on paper, we're going to fail to compete.
Well, I mean, when you compare the two rosters side by side, and I had heard chatter on Twitter that the Whitecaps was the other potential place for Greg Garza. That's something to think about in terms of like what, you know, they weren't able to, you know, if they did not offer the same package or if they were not considered to be the same, if for some other reason they were more amenable as a target. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. The other thing is that I look at a player like Fernando Addy, and it's not even a Zlatan, right? Like I think that people often are too drawn in this way of like, oh, we need a big international superstar, or people are spoiled and they just want a big international superstar, but they don't understand, man, right? Like yeah. They're like people focus too hard on this topic, but like us, a player that is a proven amazing talent in this league, like a Fernando Addy or a Maxi Arruti, is a player who has not in many recent seasons made his way to the Whitecaps.
Yeah, I agree. And where the Whitecaps were smart is picking up the likes of Felipe, for instance, of a really great player with MLS experience, and you know, there's every reason to believe that that could still work out. I still think there's reason to be optimistic, but you know, January can't come soon enough to start to see when the real signings hopefully start pouring in.
Absolutely. Do you have any other key player news that you're interested in? Oh yeah, Joseph Martinez was the MVP. This is our code out of the awards.
Yeah,
definitely proved it in the game. So
well,
good work for him.
Yep. I thought Zlatan might have come in and stolen it at the end somehow, but.
Oh yeah, the MVP for the Copa Libertadores, Pity Martinez, is going to Atlanta. So I guess that's their first.
One Martinez for another. Why not?
Yeah, well, in the meantime, and now that we're in our off season position, we're gonna start going every 2 weeks, as we let MLS news really kind of like wash upon us.
Yes, and it does come in waves. It's either it's crickets or all of a sudden your team's gone.
Oh no. Where can we find you online?
You can find me online tweeting sporadically at That's So MLS. Also on Instagram at That's So MLS. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Team Bates on Twitter, www.team-bates.com. I am an editor at Howler Magazine. Howler Magazine, whatahowler.com. And you can find this podcast at thatsomls.com. And wherever good podcasts are found, like Apple Podcasts and TuneIn Radio and the Internet.
And the Internet.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for following along this season. We're very excited to see what the off season holds, and MLS comes back before the Nations League does, if you can believe it.
It's so crazy to think that in a couple of months things are starting back up again. So I'm going to enjoy some downtime. I hope others will as well. Another great season. If we're just looking at the league as a whole, a real banner year, not without its controversies, but I think one of the best seasons I've followed so far. And I'm sure there's going to be lots of excitement and lots of strange and wonderful storylines next year. And of course, we'll be bi-weekly. And we'll keep you up to speed so that when the season starts, you won't be totally out of the loop.
Absolutely not. Until next time, because suspensions do accrue through to the first game of the season. Duncan sent off.